what's going on? Welcome to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. Fun, loaded show. Fun, loaded day in general. We got Blue Jays back in action with the Red Sox in town tonight. On our show, we're going to talk to Chad Jennings, who covers the Red Sox for The Athletic in a little bit. You just heard the Jays Talk Plus theme song on our way in. We're going to have Steve Slatkowski on the show of Pup the Band, who did that theme song for us. We've also got the Leafs looking to close out their series against the Ottawa Senators. If you are listening on the radio tonight, the Blue Jays game will be on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And if you go, or if you go to sportsnet.ca/590, the Leafs game will be on 680 AM, but you could also go to sportsnet.ca/590 to listen to it there. It is, of course, on Sportsnet CBC and Sportsnet Plus as well. Jays game on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet Plus. More important than any of those things, than the Leafs closing out the lowly, embarrassing Senators, than the Jays getting back on the right track and finally scoring more than four runs, ironically, against Garrett Crochet. Julia, it's team haircut day. Both of us have haircuts scheduled for a little later.
Okay, I have been talking about my haircut pretty much.
I was jealous.
Since we started Jays Talk Plus this season. And so I roll in today and I'm so excited about my haircut, only to hear that Blake Murphy is going to steal my thunder and also get a haircut.
Big
difference. Did you put it on your schedule? Because I've been talking about it a lot and you're just like, okay, you know what? Let's just get this over with at the same day.
It was, I mean, I get my haircut a lot more often than you because I keep my hair very short. I go like every two or three weeks. It worked out. Like I have Blue Jay Central tomorrow and Friday. So I was like, I should clean it up before then. There won't be time before I go down to the arena to the stadium tomorrow. It's tough. It's a bigger deal for you. I just hop in every once in a while. Shout out to Taylor at the fitting room.
You're forgiven, but I will keep an eye on that. And if it happens again, we may need to have a talk.
All right. I will not line my next one up with you. The other thing that is happening today, we think, Don Varsho's back.
Yeah.
It is at least expected that he's back. That's been the talk all along. He's played in seven minor league games. While he's only hit 3 for 25 with 7 strikeouts, no walks, and no extra base hits, he got to play center field in 4 of those. Even if you don't love the way the minor league numbers have looked, had a pretty solid spring training at the plate as a DH only. Obviously a guy who could add 20-ish home run power to the middle part of the Blue Jays order. We'll also find out who's going down. How excited are you to see Dalton Varsho back in the lineup?
Yeah, I think, listen, with the way that things have gone, you add a guy like that who is for sure a streaky hitter and has always been a streaky hitter, but maybe that is what the Blue Jays need right now, is just someone to come in and provide them with a little bit more power, even if it is for just a stretch, right? Blake, at this point, we kind of take it wherever we can get it, and if Dalton Varsho is going to be that guy for a little bit until everyone can get back on track, then great. The one thing that I'm looking for a little bit more is who is going to get sent down for this move to happen, especially with, you know, Shai Davidi reporting this morning that the Blue Jays may want to see more of Anthony Santander in the field, which means that he's not going to DH as much as he has, and that really does play a factor in when you look at guys like Alan Roden, when you look at a guy like Nathan Lucas, who is going to get sent down if, especially now, you have one of those corner outfield spots even more locked than before with the return of Dalton Varsho to center field.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And look, the reality is there wasn't going to be enough playing time for all of these guys. Anyway, roster-wise, you have to send someone down. I do wonder if that framing, that Anthony Santander is wanted in the corners a little bit more, if the lack of playing time for whoever hangs on to that 12th and 13th spot, if that leans it a little back in the direction of Nathan Lucas, a guy who is almost 31 years old and they are very comfortable not playing every day. Now, your bench doesn't have a ton of utility from a pinch hitting perspective if Nathan Lucas and Miles Straw are your 12th and 13th guys, but we're talking about Addison Barger, who's 25. We're talking about Will Wagner, who's 26, Alan Roden, who's 25, guys who on paper you want playing a little more often. Maybe they don't want one of those guys sitting and only playing in kind of pinch hit and defensive replacement, or pinch run and defensive replacement scenarios. So it does end up being one of the younger guys who maybe has a little more upside than Lucas, who goes down for the sake of playing time.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would love to see Addison Barger a little bit longer here, actually give him a chance to show if he has figured it out a little bit more than what we saw last season, and a guy who can obviously provide you with a third base spot as well if you need him to go there. So, yeah, we'll see. But That will be one of the most fascinating decisions so far for the Blue Jays.
Whoever stays on the roster, whoever's in there tonight, good luck. You're going up against Garrett Crochet. Let's get the state of the Red Sox. Let's talk to Chad Jennings of The Athletic. He joins us now. Chad, how we doing, man?
I'm doing all right. It's I tell you what, if you're coming to play the Red Sox, drawing Crochet is the problem, right? Because they've kind of the rest of the rotation hasn't been that good. But Crochet's been good. And that's if you can avoid him, you try to. But things aren't going great for the Blue Jays right now. And so, of course, they end up lining up for Crochet.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. Sox come into this one 16-14, second in the East, 10th in the latest edition of the power rankings over at The Athletic. Chad, kind of big picture before we drill in on some of the specifics. What is the vibe around this Red Sox team right now? They do seem to be a team that's gotten a fair amount of love from national analysts, even though they haven't necessarily gone gangbusters out of the gate here.
Yeah, I'm one of the people who votes in our power rankings, and I think some of it is a little bit of confusion of what to do with the American League in general, right? Like, you just assume the top eight teams can't possibly all be in the National League, so surely one of these American League teams is decent. But it's hard to know who. I mean, the American League is kind of a bizarre place right now. The Tigers have played well. You know, the Yankees are in first place in the East, but I don't know that you feel great about them. The same, you know, Red Sox are right there above 500, but like pitching's not been very good. It's just, I think all of the American League still feels kind of unsettled where you're not real sure what to believe. So that's kind of what I make of the Red Sox right now. Is it's a little bit hard to know where they are. They don't have, they're just starting to get some of their arms healthy. Brian Bayo just came back. Lucas Giolito's getting close. If they can get their rotation back together, I think maybe that's a little bit of the faith in them, is that their offense has been pretty good. And if they can just start to pitch again, then you think, all right, you could see how it could line up for them to be, you know, not like necessarily a top three or four team in the league, but one of the better teams, and certainly one of the better teams in the AL.
Yeah, Chad, you talk about the pitching side of things. The Red Sox right now is sixth in runs per game and ninth in WRC plus. So you see that they are obviously scoring runs. That is not the problem. And when you start to get those healthy arms back in the rotation, maybe that stabilizes a little bit. 17th in starters ERA right now, but 19th in relief pitching ERA. Mm-hmm. Early on in the season, or even before the season started, it seemed like the bullpen would be that great unknown for the Red Sox. Is that still the case? I know that Aroldis Chapman has been pretty unbelievable for his age and everything else, but how do you see this bullpen, and is that still perhaps the main point of concern for this team?
Yeah, I think it is. It's that was one of the odd things. I think it was one of the easiest things to not even second guess, but sort of first guess coming into spring training, is that you kind of looked around and you're like, man, they really didn't address the bullpen in a way you would have expected. Now, the Chapman signing has been great. They've got Garrett Whitlock healthy again, and with him in the bullpen, he's been really good. But otherwise, a little bit of, still some uncertainty there kind of in the middle. Nothing that's been awful, but just not a lot of real lockdown guys. You know, they just got Liam Hendricks back, and maybe, he's kind of an unknown, right? Whether, he's come back from surgery, hasn't pitched a lot in the last 3 years or so. So how good is he going to be at this point? I do think the bullpen is kind of going to feel a little bit of an unknown until some other guys maybe step up. Because right now it's Chapman and Whitlock kind of leading the way, and everything else feels a little bit uncertain. But the rotation, I think, has kind of been an early concern, at least in part because, Tanner Houck coming off of an all-star season, and he just really struggled here in the first month. So, that's kind of a problem. But again, as you say, they're getting some guys back healthy. Crochet has pitched well. Bayo back, Giolito back. I think the rotation will come along, and so you do wonder about whether they have enough in the bullpen.
Chad, performance aspect of this aside, how cool has it been to see Liam Hendricks back on the mound, first time in almost two full calendar years? Of course, the cancer treatment, then the Tommy John. So for him to finally get back out on the mound, nice little boost from a, feel-good perspective before we even worry about the results and where he slots in here.
Yeah, for sure. And just one of the more engaging personalities in the game, too, like a guy who just the way he goes about it, right? There's such an energy to him. There's an excitement to him. And then knowing the backstory of, what he's overcome and the cancer treatment and all of this, he is a guy who's pretty you say easy to root for, and I think that's true, but you can also say just fun to watch. I mean, he's fun on a, even without all of that, just the way he, it's maybe not always best for public television, the way he reacts to things, because he's going to shout some words that you're not supposed to say, but it's fun, right? Like he's an engaging guy to watch. And so yeah, I think he brings some energy to them.
Also returning this week from a 2-year absence it's not cancer, but it's still an internal brace and a hamstring injury. We haven't seen Lucas Giolito in almost 2 years. We're going to see him tomorrow make his season debut, his first start since 2023. I know he's made 10 minor league starts of varying length here, mixed results. What are the Red Sox expecting from Lucas Giolito out of the gate?
It's hard to say. I think they thought he was going to be ready. They thought he was going to be ready for opening day, and then he kind of had a little bit of a setback in spring training. I think they got him just thinking durability, right? I don't think they acquired him thinking that he's kind of going to go back to being kind of a number one starter. And not sure they need that, especially with Crochet there. So I just think something to stabilize this. Like I said, the rotation's been kind of a weakness early on. I mean, they did get good starts out of Richard Fitz, but he's got hurt. Fitz being he's a rookie kid they put in the rotation because guys were hurt. He pitched well, but then he got hurt as well. They've called up this kid Hunter Dobbins a couple times. He's pitched well, but those aren't the guys you're wanting to lean on, right? Like this rotation's supposed to be built around Crochet at the top, and then you just assume you're going to get stability out of Giolito, out of Walker Buehler, out of Tanner Houck. And they just haven't been able to get that so far. So I think if he can just come in and give them just a stable force there, again, with the lineup, they should be able to score enough runs. As long as Giolito's a guy who, can give them some innings and, just pitch. He doesn't have to pitch like a number one at this point. If he's pitching like a 3-4, I think that's all they need.
Chad, stay on the rotation here. You mentioned Tanner Houck a little bit earlier, and you're right in that it's been a little bit wonky, right? You get a couple of shaky outings. You get a couple of average to okay starts from him. What is it that's different this season, and what do the Red Sox need him to do to sort of right the ship here?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I can pinpoint. I think that Tanner has always been a guy who's kind of tweaking things a little bit, right? He came into even when they drafted him out of the University of Missouri, there was originally some thought of like, is this guy going to be a starter? Does he have to be in the bullpen? Can he get lefties out? Can he come up with either a changeup or something to work like a changeup? Does he have to throw four seams or can he go to two? Like, always it feels like with Tanner, there's some question of like the sense that he needs to change something and he always needs to find something. And so in that sense, this isn't all that different than what Tanner's kind of always been. There's always been something that Tanner's sort of tweaking and working on. So to be able to pinpoint right now and say, like, here's his problem, I don't know that I can do that right now. Because he can find it in a lot of different ways. It's been, as you said, I mean, he came off probably his best start of the year, which was against the Blue Jays. And then he went like 6 2/3, one run. But they followed it up by giving up 11 earned. So he's just been really inconsistent. And when he's coming off of such a breakout year, when he made the All-Star team, that's certainly not what they were expecting, that they were going to get this level of inconsistency out of him.
So, Chad, when we look at where the rotation is in general, and we look back to the decisions that the Red Sox made in the offseason, obviously they added Garrett Crochet, and that's the headline item. They brought in Walker Buehler as well. They did make the decision. They obviously dislike Canadians. They let Nick Pivetta walk. They let Tyler O'Neill walk and didn't even give him a qualifying offer. Maybe Pivetta's deal, 4 years, 55, with multiple player opt-outs, was just too player friendly for the Red Sox to stay in the mix. But when you look at that sequence of offseason moves, what does that feel like to you now that we've seen a little bit, and acknowledging that, Cutter Crawford is also on the IL, Brian Baio just got off the IL. So there's been some injury stuff here. But do you think the Red Sox are comfortable with the way that the offseason played out, looking at the rotation where it is today?
Yeah, I think so. I think that what they felt like with Pivetta, that you wanted basically what they're able to get, I think, instead of Pivetta, was they got their high end ace in Crochet, and they felt like Buehler gave them that sort of mid-rotation floor, right? Like Buehler, no one's expecting Buehler to be, to go back to his sort of like heyday when he was young and coming up with the Dodgers. The Red Sox didn't really need that, but they needed somebody who could be a real ace, I think, beyond what they expected Pivetta could be. So they go out and they get Crochet to fill that ace role and then backfill with Buehler to be the more of the stabilizing force. And then at that point, you went into spring training with six starters, plus they think their upper-level depth is better, and that's shown. That's played out with Richard Fitz, with Hunter Dobbins. So I just think in the end, they just felt like they could get more of the extremes of what they needed by getting away from Pivetta and going with these two guys. With Tyler O'Neill, their outfield is just super crowded as it is. I mean, they're playing Willier Abreu in right field has been one of their best players. He's coming off a Gold Glove season. Very good, especially against righties. Jaron Duran, you know, coming off of an All-Star season. They're pretty well committed to Seydon Rafaela in center. And they have Rob Refsnyder as their big right-handed fourth outfielder. So there just wasn't really a spot for O'Neill, even though I think they liked him. And I thought he played well for them last year. It's just once Abreu and Duran kind of solidified themselves last season, there were not going to be outfield at bats for O'Neill, and so he wound up in Baltimore.
It's pretty amazing that it's April 29th and there's still so much to talk about the Red Sox offseason, because it was a busy one for them.
A lot,
Chad,
of turnover.
A ton of stuff. And obviously one guy who they probably could not be happier with is Alex Bregman, right? Tied for the lead in the American League right now with extra base hits, just really coming in with a championship mentality. He's a guy who's talking about proving people right as the Red Sox get all this love from national writers and things of this sort. What have you seen from Alex Bregman, especially at Fenway Park, with the way that he hits?
Well, the numbers are what they are. You know, he's hit at Fenway his whole career, right? Now, you don't know, you know, how much of that is a sample, right? He's only, when you're coming in as a visitor, you get a few games and you can put up some pretty crazy numbers, but he's kept doing that. The thing that still stands out to me, though, was just seeing him in spring training. They talked a lot. Look, this team's young right now, especially for the Red Sox, right? I don't think you think of the Red Sox as a team that's like constantly going to have a young roster, right? You're used to them coming out and getting some stars and bringing them in, but they were young. And I think they needed not only a right-handed bat, but they needed a presence. And that's a big thing for Cora. I think Alex Cora really wanted a guy who these young guys could look to and see like, this is the way to do it. And, man, that showed up right away in spring training. I mean, just the way guys just flocked to Bregman and followed him, he really set a tone. Even some of the veteran guys were talking about the way he wanted everyone to have a routine. Okay, no, guys, we're all doing this. Let's all go here right now. We're not all just going to show up for these fielding drills. This is what we're all wearing to go do this drill today. You know what I mean? Like these things where it was like, he worked to kind of get everyone on board, and he has enough, you know, I mean, his resume is what it is. I mean, they follow him. And I think he's been a really positive influence in that way. And, you know, the thing you worried about was how is that going to impact Devers needing to move to DH at such a young age, you know, 28 years old, to become a full-time DH is really young. And he was understandably frustrated by it and came out of the gate just awful. But he's come around, and I think, and you know, he's hitting well above average at this point. So, I think it's working. Like this thing, you were going to have to smooth some things over with Raffy, but as long as that's working and Raffy's starting to hit again, that Bregman addition, it really has given them that edge in the clubhouse that I think they really felt like they needed.
Yeah, from a Toronto perspective, this seemed pretty predictable that it would work out. He'd be a good fit for the ballpark and everything like that. It's annoying.
Yeah,
it's not great. Before we let you go here, Chad, you mentioned some of those young guys that Bregman is trying to lead here. This is, you know, you mentioned it. It's an uncharacteristically young Red Sox team on the position player side. I believe they're the eighth youngest base in terms of, you know, weighted plate appearances and things like that. We've got Christian Campbell playing every day and even seeing some time in center field. Sedane Rafaela and Tristan Casas, like, kind of struggling, but Casas coming around. And then Marcello Meyer and Roman Anthony, more or less ready to go. We'll see if Anthony's okay after that injury scare the other day, but mostly ready to go if needed at AAA. How do the Red Sox kind of look with Christian Campbell? It's just been it's worked. You don't I don't even know if you have to worry about it anymore. But navigating that they are in a win now window, Rafaela and Cassis are younger but struggling. They've got a couple guys ready. How do they navigate that aspect of it the rest of the way here?
Well, I think if they had a spot, I mean, look, you just look at they put Campbell on the roster for opening day. The guy had. I mean, he was awful in spring training. His numbers were terrible this spring, but they trust the data, right? They're looking at all this stuff in cages, and they know what his swing looks like, and they just knew he was going to hit, and they had a hole at second base, and so he fit, and they brought him up. The thing they have now is Marcelo and Roman Anthony. That's a shortstop and an outfielder, and those are just the areas they don't have a need right now. There's not a – I don't know that they need to – press the issue. It's more just like, at what point can you find a spot for them? And I don't know that, again, as long as the offense is humming along, I don't know that you feel much need to sort of force the issue. But it will be interesting if those two keep doing what they're doing. You know, at some point, is there a way to think outside the box here and try to get them involved? Because right now, you know, like you said, I mean, the weakest spots for the Red Sox are kind of first base, catcher, center field. You know, maybe you could move some things around to get Anthony into the outfield, move Duran back to center or something. There are maybe ways you could do it, but those guys aren't going to catch and they're not going to play first. So otherwise, there's not really a hole that you need them to fill at the moment. But it's baseball. At some point, that will change. And those guys are performing in such a way where you have to think that they're very much on the radar for a call up whenever at bats are available.
Yeah, and it certainly puts into a certain, like Christian Campbell getting center field reps, maybe not just for the major league right now, but with Meyer knocking on the door there. Chad, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thank you. What Chad, a good problem to have, huh?
Yeah.
Too many options in AAA.
Yes. Chad Jennings of The Athletic, a great Red Sox reporter. A lot of other good stuff that Chad does as well. A really great piece 2 weeks back on Kim Ng, the former Marlins general manager who has left Major League Baseball to head up a new pro softball league as the commissioner. Urge you to go read that. Ran out of time to talk with him about it because we're going to take a break. And when we come back on the other side, my good pal Steve Slatkowski is going to join us. We're going to talk some walk-up music. We're going to talk State of the Blue Jays. We're going to do some, I'd imagine I'm going to get picked on in this next segment as well. We'll also take a closer look at Garrett Crochet against Bowden Francis, the matchup that starts us off tonight. The rest of the series, Lucas Giolito against TBD, whether that's bullpen day, Eric Lauer, who's on turn. The Jays claimed Casey Lawrence off of waivers yesterday, the fifth time they've added him to the organization in
before.
His 15-year career. Five-time Toronto Blue Jay now, Casey Lawrence. We'll have to figure that one out. And then Thursday, we believe, will be Tanner Houck against Jose Berríos. We'll get you set up for all of that with Steve Slatkowski as Jays Talk Plus continues with Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkin Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Blake Murphy and Julia Kreutz with you. And for those of you watching on TV or Sportsnet Plus, you'll see a large head to my left. It belongs to Steve Slatkowski, my good pal and guitarist in Pup the Band. How you doing, buddy?
I'm well, you know, head big, you know,
yeah.
The hair.
As someone who used to co-host with Will Liu, this is a comfort zone for me. Julie and her normal-sized head over here have been an adjustment.
Yeah, you didn't get the memo on the...
I'm sorry. I did my best. I didn't have enough prep time, so I'm just rolling with my normal head size.
That's good. That's good. I like that.
Thanks for joining us. This is awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was in that chair last time. So this is like a whole new world.
Yeah, we've changed up the fielding alignment,
that's right.
Floor spacing.
That's right.
All that kind of
We're
stuff.
Playing the shift.
Yes. exactly. Not banned here.
Not banned. That's right.
Not banned here. Okay. We're having you on, I mean, just because you and I talk baseball every day anyway, but you guys have some pretty big stuff coming with Pup. Before we do that though, Julia was unaware until I told her at the break there that our theme music on Jays Talk Plus is something you put together for us.
Yes.
Because you were looking for a punk rock version of OK Blue Jays or something like that. We've got a guitar jazz guy weirdo play up on Take Me Out to the Ball Game instead.
Yes. So, when you initially asked me when the show started to do the music, obviously that was like a fun challenge. And yeah, I thought the most kind of, I was like, what could be the most annoying thing that I could do while still kind of getting away with something fun musically that would feel kind of familiar. So I just, instead of Take Me Out to the Ball Game as a waltz, I think I've talked about this on the show before, but I just straightened it out into 4/4 that made it sound more punk, and then kind of just wrote like a little organ, baseball kind of organ. That was sort of stealing from Ben Gibbard, who did that music for the Ringer baseball show.
Yes.
Yeah, I stole that idea from him.
Yes, Ben Gibbard of Death Cab.
Yes.
For anyone who doesn't know, I am Postal Service.
Was that top five weirdest requests you have gotten from Blake over the course of your friendship or not?
Not even close.
Yeah.
That's what I figured.
Yeah, I think, I guess it would depend. Maybe
radio appropriate?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I was gonna say, there's no way to answer this question for it to not sound a little bit.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
Anyway, okay. How's the album going?
Well, so let me do my my Jimmy Fallon here. So here we go. Pup's fifth album, Who Will Look After the Dogs, is coming out on Friday. I'm very excited for it. You guys, obviously I'm biased. We're all good friends, but it's great. I've heard a lot of it already. And look, you guys have six shows coming up in Toronto in July during the All-Star break, so I could just hang around for all of them. It's great. You have U.S. tour coming with Jeff Rosenstock in the fall. Canadian tour that was announced today in the winter with Snotty Nose Res Kids. You guys are doing New Zealand and Australia. You're doing Europe. You leave what, Sunday? Monday?
Sunday.
How are you feeling?
I'm tired already. Yeah.
No, pretty tired.
I'm good. I'm really excited. You know, it's funny, like every time we do this, I feel like I forget things take a while. And, you know, it's one of those things where I'm just excited to have the music out, right? Like, it's almost a year to the day since we finished recording it. I'm just excited for people to hear it and to start playing these songs live for people.
Yes, it's a lot of fun. Obviously, the video for Paranoid is already out. That's out as a single featuring your boy.
Yes.
Yo, yeah.
Yeah. Just
as an FBI agent, but we won't hold that against you.
What I do, cop and bailiff and FBI agent now over the course of the pup canon. It's good. So this is your fifth album. And obviously, you know, you and I have talked a lot personally about, you know, how amazing it is that you guys have gotten to a fifth album and been successful enough. Process wise, how did this one feel? What's changed for you guys over the kind of album process?
I think a big thing was sort of returning back to it being the four of us in a room kind of playing things together. The last record I'm very proud of, but, you know, it was a pandemic record. We were kind of like bubbled together, and we were sort of all we had was our own brains, which is a dangerous proposition for four neurotic people.
Yeah, and also you're like whiteboards of like planning and stuff like that. We're just out of control at that point.
And so it's like, you know, that was a very easy way to be like, yeah, we should just put a saxophone here, and like, or we'll put a synthesizer like that nobody can really play.
What if we green screen an entire music video?
Yeah, exactly, right? So like, I think letting that sort of like experimental kind of, as experimental as we get anyway, and like creative kind of process like run completely like unhinged was useful. But I think what we did here was sort of try and marry those two approaches, like the rock band, the four dudes in a room, two guitars, a bass, and drums, with some of those more kind of experimental things, but actually trying to do it like in the room in real time, right? So I had all these weird like mad scientist pedal board stuff going on, and then working with John Congleton, who's like an amazing producer, you know, who's worked with like St. Vincent and Bill Callahan and all kinds of different bands. He kind of both pushed our madness kind of further and also like reined it in moments that were like really, really, really cool. So I'm excited for people to hear that.
You always need someone like that in your life, I feel like, especially in a creative process.
That's why we have a producer.
Exactly.
That's right.
Comb
through my, hey, Blake, you've got 8 pages of notes for a 45-minute show today. Maybe we trim that down. Okay, so I mentioned you guys are doing 6 nights of shows in Toronto in July. They sold out so quickly that we don't even need to promote them, but keep an eye out for
that
stuff. It's a lot of fun. And then just announced this morning is you guys are going to do an album release show on Thursday in conjunction with Matty Matheson's Rizzo's House of Parm. What can you tell us about Thursday night? Look, you guys put this tweet out at 10:08 a.m. I imagine all the spots are already filled, but what can you tell us about Thursday Olive Garden style album release party?
Anytime we have a chance to like really kind of take a stupid idea to its logical conclusion, I think we will take that opportunity. So there's a song on the new record called Olive Garden, which just is, you know, again, anytime you can write something kind of funny to sort of balance, there's some pretty heavy themes on the record. So, you know, one of the things we like to do is kind of juxtapose that with humor and kind of like sort of balance, you know. So as we were kind of like talking about ways to promote the new record and kind of just do fun, kind of different things we haven't done before, the idea of like leaning into like the Olive Garden idea was just sort of like one that like somebody said it and it kind of seemed dumb. And then somebody said it again and we were, it sounded less dumb
the
every
time. The more you say it.
Yeah. So we kind of talked ourselves into it. And so, yeah, we reached out to Maddie and to Rizzo's and they were generous enough to say, yeah, let's cater it. Let's do it. Blood Brothers, I think, is a great local brewery, in a neighborhood that, Aguirre is very close to, a rehearsal space that we used to rehearse at. You know, it just felt like a fun kind of thing to do and who knows what other goofy stuff. I think we're going to like print out like paper bibs and some paper,
awesome.
Some paper, like menus, like, you know, placemat menus.
Yes.
Yeah, we just, as far as we can, like I said, as far as we can take a dumb idea, we certainly will.
I'm also, you guys haven't promised this. I'm anticipating unlimited breadsticks on Thursday.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, someone's getting a breadstick.
Soup and breadsticks?
Yeah.
That would make for an interesting punk rock concert.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Soup in the pit? You could have soup in the pit.
Let me ask you this, though. You have 6 nights of shows in Toronto, a bunch of different, in July, that is, a bunch of different locations. Do you have a favorite spot to play in Toronto?
There are so many. Like, we've been doing this for a long time now. I think if I had chosen a favorite, it actually doesn't really exist anymore the way that it did when we were kind of coming up. But the old Silver Dollar Room, booked by Dan Burke, I think was probably more than anything else, like our kind of home. When we were starting out and for many, many years, we did a lot of time at the Danforth Music Hall, which is one of the venues on that little tour of Toronto. Yeah. You know, I don't know, the Sneaky D's, like there are so many, it's hard to pick one, you know, but yeah, those three, Sneaky D's, Silver Dollar, Danforth, those all feel like pretty important and pretty, significant kind of venues that our career sort of have like little juncture points.
Yeah, this is such a cool city for live music. I think that is one of the first things when I moved here that I was like, oh man, we don't get that everywhere. And this is a place where that exists and is lively and it just continues on, even though some places go, some places come, and just that's the nature of it. But Toronto is still a very, very good scene for live music.
Yeah, right? We're hanging on venue-wise and investment in the arts-wise.
Yeah.
Totally.
You know,
hopefully. And I think too, like, you know, there are always people who take it upon themselves to
100%.
Find those gaps and kind of fill those holes in a way that's like special and very interesting.
Okay, so you just mentioned a couple. Danforth isn't a small venue, but a couple more intimate venues that mean a lot for you guys. You guys have also opened for Sum 41 at Scotiabank on their final shows. You guys have played Bud Stage with Alexis on Fire. You guys have done some big stuff. This is the 5th album. It's going to be a huge hit. This all leads me to the most important question. When are you getting out? When are you getting to throw out the first pitch?
No, boy.
Former elite Toronto inner city first baseman. I know first baseman doesn't have to throw a lot, but we got to see it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, if the Blue Jays are listening.
Ali Khan's listening.
Yeah. It would be fun. It would be big for me. It would be big probably for my dad, who's probably watching right now. Hi, Dad. Yeah, you know, I also feel like I would be, like, you know, if George W. Bush was really locked in to throw that strike, back in the day, like, I feel like I would need to lock in maybe even more than that. So I really didn't,
Did you see on Sunday Night Baseball Shams threw out the first pitch? Shams Charania?
No, I didn't.
So he's a Chicago guy. He threw out the first pitch at Wrigley.
I guess there's no breaking news.
Yeah, no one's demanding a trade until, these first round series are over.
Exactly.
So he's got a minute. Okay, I want to switch to baseball here. So this is, I'm going to put you on the spot for this one. There have been some Blue Jays over the course of time that have come out to cool
walk-up music.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is the 8 seconds you get on your way to the plate, or if you are a reliever where you get like a full song, you can really lean into it. And I am wondering, you've been going to games for like 30 years. Which Blue Jay, historically, do you think would have been the likeliest, not necessarily to come out to pop on their own, but that we could have convinced to come out to pop?
Okay, historically, I have like two, maybe three kind of like old head options.
Okay.
The first one, the one that like came to my mind immediately is Mike Timlin.
Okay.
Relief pitcher. I think relief pitcher music is probably a great like description for the band. But also anyone who like could do something so spectacularly like bad, like that slide that Mike Timlin took in the World Series where he cut up his chin, like messing up at your job like that, that feels like very, very much like in spiritually in line with the kind of music we make. and so that was my first choice, for sure. And then, you know, then I started thinking about like Blue Jays who are from like cities that we have like a pretty good following in. So like a, you know, like a John Allrude from Seattle. We do well in Seattle.
Which would mean so much to you.
Yeah, of course. Of course. He was my favorite player growing up. You know, and I just think like, he's probably grungy. I imagine he's grungy.
Sure.
You know,
you wear the helmet in the pit since he worked defending at first base.
Not that we're like particularly grungy, but I just feel like, you know.
Yeah, it lends itself well,
you
I think.
Fit
to
in
that
Seattle. That's
yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Do you want me to keep going? Should I keep going?
Yeah, or I mean,
you
have, I have a few. I have a couple
please,
as well.
I would like to hear yours.
Look, John Axford is cheating.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I did have John Axford as well, which my wife was like, how are you not going to put Axe on this list?
It's
and
cheating.
I was like, you're right. I should.
I've been in the pit with him at a pup show. We know he's the answer. I actually went to see Refused with him a couple weeks ago, and he always came out to the new noise by or not always, but for the most part, he came out to new noise by Refused. So Axford feels like it's cheating. I think on the current team, Addison Barger comes out to System of a Down.
Sure. Okay.
He's a Pacific Northwest guy. Yep. When I asked him about System of a Down, he said, hey, like the grunge stuff, like old music is what he said to me. But
old
I feel like we could guide him from System of a Down to Puff pretty easily.
Yeah, I like that
So that would be my pick on the current roster.
I had a few. I didn't have any from the current roster.
Julia, you had one from the current roster, right?
Yeah, it was Barger, I believe.
Well, you threw another one out there yesterday.
Kind of Chad Green as well. He warms up to Green Day, which...
Right, there you go.
It's like, probably more a name pun than a music taste, but maybe we could get him there.
Brandon Belt walked out to Weezer a few seasons ago.
True.
Yeah,
say that would have been.
We also are born literally on the same day, so I feel like, you know,
that's something that you could bring up.
Exactly,
that would have been
important.
So I went through the archives to find the former Blue Jays who have music that are like close enough.
Wow. Okay.
So BJ Ryan, Duality by Slipknot.
Sure. Yeah, I thought of that one.
The first gen LED lights with the flames around Rogers Center was one of my favorite. Brett Cecil came out the Five Finger Death Punch, which isn't that close, but again, a reliever.
Yeah.
I think maybe we could guide him
there's
there.
A theme here.
Marco Estrada is into like alt rock stuff. He's come out to Drowning Pool. I've talked to him about his music taste before.
I thought about that one too.
And then maybe the closest one, Ryan Tepera came out to Coheed.
Oh,
and
sure.
I wonder if we could guide Coheed and Cambria is obviously like its own thing, its own genre.
I could see us getting like an invite for their cruise or something.
This feels also just like a farm system project where you go to spring training and you educate the younger guys that are coming up.
Throw out the first pitch at a Bison's game and give everyone the mixtape.
I thought you just meant I should like stand in center field with a boombox over my head.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, why not? It's Triple A. It's the minor leagues. They do that stuff.
Okay, so do you have current ones or old head
I
ones?
I mostly had old ones.
Okay,
I
was what else you got?
I had Marcus Semien because he's from the Bay.
Okay.
The historic hotbed of punk rock.
Yeah.
And then Sean Green. Sean Green just feels like a guy who would have been, he would be a pup fan.
Yeah.
Kids would be a pup fan maybe. So he's like dragged out to
the... soon.
There you go.
So I don't think I'll ask him that because it's too out
like,
there.
Hey, we're calling back something you definitely haven't heard.
Yes. So... where we go from here is I have a pitch for who should use it non-Blue Jays. So if we look around baseball, there are a couple guys who use punk, more pop punk than what you guys sound like. Like Ryan Mountcastle and Mitch Garver both come out to All-Time Low. Mason Miller comes out to Nickelback, which is pretty funny for
pretty funny
for a closer. But here's my pitch. Cade Smith of the Cleveland Guardians, just took over the closer role in Cleveland from Emmanuel Clase. I cannot find on any of the MLB sites, the Apple Music playlists, on Twitter, what his walk-up music is. And he's Canadian.
Huh.
New closer, doesn't have an established walkout song, Canadian. You guys make reliever music.
Get him on the horn.
Cade Smith. That's
Which hit would you pitch for Cade Smith here?
Definitely not full-blown meltdown.
No,
you don't want that.
You had that on deck, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, it crossed my mind. But that's
yeah. So, I feel like we can't give it to Mountcastle just because he's a Jays killer.
He's also
know?
Dear Maria.
So
count
you don't
me
even
in.
Want that.
No. Yeah. Dear okay. Maria, count me in's been his thing for a while now. So,
I do think once they played one of our songs, like while Mark Burley was pitching, but I think that was just like in the dome. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Although yeah. Burley has the Drew Fair Service look-alike thing. I don't know. Maybe there's enough similarity there. Okay, this is a standard baseball podcast question, but what would your walk-up song be?
I don't know.
I told you ahead of time I was going to ask.
You did. I was thinking about the players. I was going to say, you know, I think I would want to have something that was like from the city, from like representing Toronto. Like,
yes.
You know, maybe that's like a 44 caliber love letter by Alexis, even though they're not fully from Toronto.
The thing with Alexis too is they are also relief pitcher music, and like when we say pupper relief pitcher music bracket derogatory, yeah. Alexis on Fire are relief pitcher music bracket complimentary, because they have so many songs like 44 caliber that start slow and build. So by the time you get to the mound, it's been like this kind of, you can do the lights,
right.
You can do the slow walk out of the bullpen. And then by the time you get there and you're firing your 8 warm-up pitches, the song is really picked up.
You know, or maybe something like by a legendary kind of like Toronto band for us, like a, you know, for me, like I love the Deadly Snakes. So maybe something by the Deadly Snakes, you know,
I love
great band.
Steve, let me ask you this. You're going to Europe. You're going to New Zealand. You're going to Australia, you know, to the States as well, although that's less of a shock. Let's put it like that. As a sports fan, how do you navigate that? How tuned in do you, you know, stay with the Blue Jays in the summer? What is that like for you?
I think it totally depends. So, like, one of my kind of favorite memories of watching sports and watching the Blue Jays specifically was we were in Australia. It was the Edwin Encarnacion wild card game.
Right on.
And I was basically like getting on a plane. I think we had to fly to Brisbane from like Sydney or something. And getting on the plane just as the game was kind of starting and landed, turned my phone on, like took every roaming hit, whatever, like just like not worried at all. I was walking off the plane, like with my phone as Encarnacion hit the home run, like watching. And it was like, you know, 10 in the morning.
Yeah,
kind of
I was
like,
going to say.
Yeah. So just like stuff like that is pretty important, you know? And then I just kind of will watch, you know, if there's a fun game or kind of something going on, depending on the timing, I'll watch either highlights or try and catch a game. Sometimes in Europe, you know, if there's like an earlier start, it kind of lines up pretty nicely with like sort of a pre-show, so I can sit and kind of hang out. But yeah, I think it kind of totally depends. Some days it's not possible, mm-hmm. You know,
for sure. I mean, I bet you're busy, so.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, the nice thing is, like, I get this show right on my phone every
that
day,
is
so
very
I can
nice,
listen
actually.
And catch up. And
so the other thing you get to do, and this is only when you're touring the U.S., this wouldn't apply to New Zealand and Australia, but the off day go to a ballpark, especially a minor league ballpark, is a Steve Slatkowski staple.
Absolutely.
What do you, have you already looked ahead to, or are you guys in the U.S. too late in the year?
No, we're in the U.S. Starting in September,
okay,
I believe.
So you'll get some.
But, yeah, so, you know, my wife is from Louisville, so anytime we're there, I try and get to the Louisville Bats game. That's where I saw Ellie De La Cruz for the first time.
That's where I learned about the possibility of torpedo bats when wedding, I took your dad to the Louisville Slugger Factory, and I asked them all these questions about what you're allowed to do with the bat design and stuff.
But yeah, you know, I think that's a big thing. Dan, who is our tour manager, he's from St. Louis. He's a big Cardinals fan. We don't hold that against him, though. He and I tend to try and go to some games. You know, like the last time we were in Baltimore, we were kind of walking distance from Camden Yards.
Nice.
It just so happened that the Orioles were in town, and we got to, that was my first time at Camden Yards. I've done a similar thing like in San Diego. When we were making the record, I specifically took the day after my birthday off, A, to party on my birthday, and B, to go to Dodger Stadium for the first time. So I got to see Dodger Stadium. So yeah, we try and, you know, that's one of the good ways, like, for as cool as touring is, it can, like any job, it can be kind of samey, and there's like a bit of monotony, and that's just, that is what it is. Like, but finding ways to kind of break that up, sports, you know, baseball parks, that's kind of one of the easy ways.
And listen, if this is something that you do, you know, with your father, you mentioned he may be watching and stuff, I'm sure that there's also a level of just feeling a little bit more at home,
totally.
Even though you're far away. You know, a ballpark is a ballpark, and it feels homey, right? No matter where you are.
And I have all these little, like, goofy souvenirs. Like, I have an anthropomorphic Dodger dog and, like, a Philly fanatic, you know, and, like, my
liver damage from dollar liver beers at the minor league
park.
Opener,
my bottle opener on my my tour, like carabiner or whatever, is from San Diego. So that's a fun way to remember those.
That's
things
really
too,
awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
Nice. All right, we only have a couple minutes left, so let's turn the page to Jays Red Sox right now. Really quick, Steve, how are you feeling about the Jays right now?
I think if you'd asked me if they were going to be kind of hovering around the 500 mark at the end of April, I would have probably been okay with it. I think the fact that they started so strong has made me, like, a little greedy.
We called it. Yeah. When you and I were at the game, the Vlad contract extension game, you and Dallas called it. It was like, yeah, they're going to fall out of first place now because J-Stock Plus is back.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, so how do you feel, I guess, is the question.
I mean, I'm getting paid to watch baseball and talk about baseball.
That's right.
I'll feel all right. I prefer for them to be better. I don't know that it's happening against Garrett Crochet.
For more information, tune into J-Stock Plus.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You can find out here. No, I don't know. I think there's a surprising amount of kind of like, I guess the last couple of days notwithstanding, but the vibes do feel a little bit better than I think I expected them to feel this year. And that to me is like a good kind of starting place. You know, whether that continues or not, who knows, but
this is how I feel about that. Is it's easy to have better vibes when you're winning.
When you're winning.
Before they went on that road trip is when we heard Bowden Francis and other guys talk about it feeling differently. We'll see today when we're down in the clubhouse later if that's still the feeling after a 1-7 stretch since everyone wrote their things are different, things feel better column. Okay, so again, it is Who Will Look After the Dogs. It's out on Friday. Keep an eye out on Pup the Band on social media for information about the Olive Garden album release party on Thursday at Blood Brothers, catered by Matty Matheson's Rizzo's House of Parm. Keep an eye out for all the tour dates, U.S., Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Europe, everywhere else, including that full week in Toronto in July. Steve, thanks for doing this, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Awesome.
All right. We normally do my one-minute rundown on the Raptors show, but we haven't talked much about Garrett Crochet, so I'm going to give you the Garrett Crochet scouting report here before we go. Obviously, 25-year-old left-hander, 6 starts so far, and this is the first time that he's been given starting pitcher with no caveats in his career, because last year he did start 32 games, but he only pitched 146 innings. Really good numbers, 3.58 ERA, one of the highest strikeout rates among all starters in baseball. So far this year, averaging over 6 innings per start, 1.95 ERA, and that strikeout rate still kicking around 30%. The walks have been up and down throughout his career. Solid ground ball rate. So all the underlying metrics are like, yeah, he's a low 3 to high 2 ERA guy. What that means is he's really, really, really good. And he gets a lot of chase, a lot of whiff. It was a little better in 2024. It's 3 fastballs driving the success. So this is kind of the Red Sox thing before Crochet even got there. But 96-mile-an-hour four-seamer, 95-mile-an-hour sinker, 90-mile-an-hour cutter, and those are his 3 primary pitches. So 3 different fastballs, like we've talked about with Chris Bassett. One kind of moving arm side, one kind of cutting the other way, one with a little bit of rise to it, and he throws really, really hard. He'll also have a changeup and a sweeper that he'll mix in. Those are big swing and miss threats. The stuff metrics, the pitch design metrics, like those a little better this year than they have in the past. The Jays have not had a lot of success against Crochet. 176 batting average, 265 slugging. Vlad and Anthony Santander are both 0-for-6
Yikes. Bowden Francis on the other side, we think, although the Blue Jays weirdly still haven't confirmed who their starter is for tonight. That's it for today. We'll break it all down tomorrow. Thanks to Chad Jennings for joining us. Thank you to Steve Slodkowski of PUP for coming on the show and for the theme music that you hear playing us out now. Thanks to Amit Mon, Jake Schultz, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Bowden Francis, Garrett Crochet at 7:07 tonight. Blair and Barker have you 2-4. They'll be back for postgame as well. Danjo and Arden on the game tonight. Jamie Madison and Mike Petriello on Blue Jay Central, and Ben Chris's show on the radio. Tomorrow, maybe a bullpen day, so you better hope Bowden Francis gets a good one today. We'll break it all down tomorrow. Have a wonderful Monday.